Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start the day from the newsroom.
I love you. You're the most beautiful girl in the world. You know that, right?
That is one of the last things Aaron Hernandez told his daughter before he died by suicide. The paradoxes of Hernandez are well chronicled in books, a Netflix documentary, and the Boston Globe Spotlight Team's Gladiator podcast. Hernandez was a football tight end drafted by the Patriots. His exceptional receiving skills earned him a contract worth $40 million. He was also a heavy drug user, prone to paranoia and violence. In 2015, he was found guilty of first-degree murder, and he died in prison 2 years later, even those closest to him are still trying to unravel what happened. Now, new phone recordings like the one you just heard shed fresh light on Hernandez's thoughts in the days and hours before his death. WBUR reporters Beth Healy and Todd Wallach have been on this story, unearthed the tapes, and are here to tell us more. Welcome back, Beth.
Good morning.
And welcome back to you too, Todd.
Good to see you.
And I want to note, we're going to talk about a number of difficult concepts. We're going to talk about suicide, potentially violence, drug use. So listeners, beware. And if you or someone you know is struggling with a mental health crisis, you can reach the mental health crisis line 24/7 by text or calling. And that phone number is 988. So, Beth, we are talking about Aaron Hernandez's final days, but I want to back up because to understand what happened in that window of time, you need to understand the story of Aaron Hernandez. So give us that kind of in summary.
Sure. So Aaron Hernandez grew up in Bristol, Connecticut, with a family that he loved, but with a father who could be violent and volatile. Father died when Aaron was 16 years old. He was a high school football star who was recruited by a number of universities to play, and he ended up going to the University of Florida. And that's where he would get his taste of big-time football, the good and the bad, when he was 17 years old.
All right. So then we understand that he had a history of alleged violence dating back to college and also used drugs during his high school and football career. And this is not about who he is by reputation, but the experience that he had that leads forward to the story we're telling now.
It was a lot about drinking and marijuana. He may have done other drugs, but mostly we know he smoked a lot of pot. It's well told in a number of places, and he got in trouble for it. He got suspended for a game in college. He went clubbing. He partied. That continued on when he went to the Patriots.
Okay, so then there's this podcast, Gladiator, comes out in 2018. You worked on it while you were at the Globe. It includes some of Hernandez's phone calls while incarcerated because he was convicted of a murder and acquitted of two other killings. So tell us why the calls from the final days of his life are just being unveiled now.
So when we did the podcast, we listened to almost 300 phone calls that were from jail when he was awaiting trial, and that was at the Suffolk County Jail. And these, Todd has actually been diligently trying to get the most recent phone calls. They were from he was convicted in prison and from his final days.
So, Todd, why did you want them?
We had a bit of a mystery of why did he die by suicide? And there were also some lapses by the prison system. There's evidence that he smoked illegal drugs in custody, and a guard missed a round an hour before his death. And we were hoping that the tapes could fill in some crucial gaps about what happened and whether there was anything that could have been done to prevent it.
So tell us about the process of getting these tapes because, I mean, this story has been unfolding and this attempt to understand what happened has been going on for years.
It's obviously a very long process, as sometimes can happen when you're trying to get records from government agencies. We've seen it in a lot of other stories. In this case, I had originally gotten recordings of several hundred calls, as Beth mentioned, from the county jail in Suffolk right after Gladiator ran. I subsequently got, I think, another 800 calls from his time in Bristol County Jail in southern Massachusetts. But the Department of Correction, the state prison system, had steadfastly maintained that prison calls were private, confidential, they weren't available, even though they routinely handed them over to law enforcement and prosecutors to use against people.
Well, and Beth, you had had access to other calls that Hernandez had made while incarcerated back when you were doing your reporting at the Boston Globe on this.
These are the calls that Todd also got when we did Gladiator. And, I mean, those calls were fascinating. They were the first time you had this window into the mind and the thinking of this very famous football player who was a convicted murderer and died by suicide. And there was a lot of fascination around him. But for the first time with those calls, we got to hear his own words, hear his thoughts.
So, Todd, who did Hernandez talk to?
Well, the prison system withheld the phone numbers and names of people he talked to. They withheld those voices. However, we can tell based on what he was talking about that he was talking to his fiance and his young daughter. We can also tell he was talking to friends. In fact, some of the football players and friends he knew talked publicly about speaking to him, like Pouncey Brothers and Fred Taylor, an NFL player, and it was clear he was also talking to an aspiring musician. So he was talking to people he was close to.
And Todd, we'll dive into later what the tone of these calls does or does not indicate. But tell us a little bit about the tone that Hernandez struck in these calls in these last few days.
Yes, it's probably very surprising to a lot of people because he sounded really upbeat shortly before he died. He had just been acquitted of a double murder in Boston and sounded pretty positive. In fact, we can hear him repeatedly in the recordings, including this one.
Everything gonna work out perfect, man. I just got faith, man. That's all you got, you know? And now, know what's crazy, fam? When everything flipped around, fam, and my innocence is proven, I already can see being nice to me now. Like, even these cops didn't change how they talk to me because they see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, in that recording, he mentions light at the end of the tunnel. It's as though he's envisioning eventually also being acquitted of the other murder and eventually walking free.
And can you explain where that optimism might have come from, Todd?
Yes. Well, he now had a new legal team, George Leontire and Jose Baez, representing him on his appeal of the first of his murder conviction against for killing his friend, Odin Lloyd. And that new legal team, which had successfully helped him be acquitted of the double murder, was now helping challenge that murder where there was only circumstantial evidence. And his lawyers were very optimistic about the hopes for his appeal.
They work out perfect, man. I'm going to fight to the end to get myself home. When I sit down, it's game time, you know?
So you can hear, again, in that recording, he sounds very hopeful. And when I talk to his lawyer, George Leontire, he said that everyone that they talked to said that he sounded nothing but hopeful.
So let's pick that thread up. And we're speaking with Todd Wallach and Beth Healy, both fantastic investigative colleagues of ours here at WBUR, who have for years been pursuing the story of Aaron Hernandez and now have unearthed new tapes from the last, sort of the final days of Hernandez's life before he died by suicide. And again, I'm going to emphasize, we are talking about suicide in this conversation. If you or someone you care about is experiencing a mental health crisis, 24/7 hotline, you can text or call 988. So, Beth, I want to be mindful. You are careful in the reporting to point out that it is not necessarily surprising for somebody to be upbeat, to sound positive, even within proximity to when they might be contemplating or die by suicide.
That is true. We talk to people, specialists, psychologists who say, you know, sometimes people can be very upbeat before they kill themselves and they don't give any indication.
And one of the things that led to wanting to get the rest of these calls, continue on this story, Beth, was, as Todd said at the beginning, trying to understand what led ultimately to Hernandez's death, and could something have been done to help him to prevent that death to have been done differently? You look at three potential driving forces that might have led Hernandez towards suicide. One is a drug called K2. So let's talk about that.
Right. So K2 has been often called synthetic marijuana. It is not marijuana at all. It's actually chemicals sprayed onto what looks like tea leaves, and people typically smoke it and can have really dangerous side effects. Here's what Dr. Nora Volkov said. She's director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse.
These long-lasting effects actually make it so much more dangerous as a drug. So it's not just potent, but how long it lasts that can make it so very toxic.
So the actual high might only last a handful of hours, but there can be a psychosis, psychotic episodes that last much longer, hallucinations, even like religious thoughts that aren't people's usual way of thinking. And it can make people suicidal. Here's Dr. Volkov again.
Someone can be very alert, awoken, and even agitated. In general, people, when they become psychotic, they can become very, very agitated.
So K2 is a very dangerous thing. And of course, you don't know what you're getting. It was very common in the prisons because it was easy to smuggle in and hard to detect.
So I'm going to take a pause there, and I'm going to come back to you for a moment, Todd, because, you know, Beth just talked about psychosis, religious ideation, et cetera. Not to be voyeuristic, but one of the things that was striking when Aaron Hernandez died was the condition of his prison cell and how they found him. And it feels like that's important in the context of what the two of you are trying to sort out. So just explain that a little bit.
It was an awful scene. There were religious writings scrawled and read on the walls. John 3:16, a Bible reference was written on his head. There was Bible with blood on it, in addition to the tools of the suicide as well.
And Hernandez was alone in the cell, had his own cell.
Yes. Now, of course, a guard missed the round an hour before he was found dead. So there's some things we don't know, but there was a lot of video and other indication, and the medical examiner ruled it was suicide by hanging.
Okay. So, Beth, I'll come back to you now because we've been talking about this use of K2. And it is interesting because in 2016, then Patriots player Chandler Jones was hospitalized after a bad reaction to the drug. At the time, the NFL banned players from using marijuana, but not K2. Of course, now we're in this unusual situation where the script has flipped. The NFL players are now allowed to use marijuana. It's legal here in the Commonwealth, but K2 is banned. It is possible, though, that Hernandez was exposed to K2 not just while in prison, but back during his playing career as well, correct?
It's possible. We don't have evidence they used it, but in the new tapes, we hear him making reference to, he's talking to one of his college friends and says, remember that fake bleep? And that would be kind of a reference to the fake marijuana and this idea that there's a guy outside his cell who is ODing
and
sick.
And of course, part of the point being here that illicit drugs shouldn't be available in a prison system, a dangerous drug like that for an inmate to use.
Well, correct.
Okay. And then we move on to another of the possible factors that affected Hernandez and that we get some light shed on by these final tapes that, Todd, you worked so hard for several years to try to get a hold of. And this is concussion, right? We know that football is bad for players' brains and that Aaron Hernandez was especially affected. What do we know about Hernandez's brain, CTE?
Yes. So CTE is a degenerative brain disease that can only be diagnosed after someone dies by looking at samples of their brain underneath a microscope. And after he died, Dr. Ann McKee, an expert on the disease at Boston University, said it was the worst case of CTE that she had ever seen in someone so young. He was just 27 and had extraordinary damage to the front of his brain, presumably from all the repeated blows to the head he'd suffered playing football, both as a professional and in college.
I should note that BU holds the broadcast license for us here at WBUR. You were talking to a BU physician there. So Aaron Hernandez talked about CTE in one of his final phone conversations from prison, Todd. Isn't that true?
He didn't mention CTE, but he did talk about concussions. And it appeared that he was referencing some sort of litigation related to the concussions that football players have suffered. And we can hear the recording now.
Tell me what I got to do, or tell me what I got to do, and whether I got to talk to my lawyers, because I'll even talk to my lawyers about it too, you know? And then see what they could do on that end too, you know, because it'll benefit us all.
So we don't have all the context because we only hear Hernandez in the recordings.
We don't know who he's talking to.
We don't, but it sounds like it was another football player, and presumably it was referencing litigation against the NCAA or the NFL regarding all the concussions that football players have suffered. And it's not clear whether it's new litigation or existing settlements that have already been reached and how football players could benefit from that.
And there has CTE been connected to other deaths by suicide, Ty?
Quite a few. When I spoke to Dr. Ann McKee, she emphasized that there's no hard link, but they have seen case after case after case where somebody with CTE died by suicide, and we know that CTE has been linked to violence and impulsiveness and unexpected behavior like the kind that we saw in Hernandez.
So we're speaking with WBUR's Todd Wallach and Beth Healy here. Aaron Hernandez, the final days before he did die by suicide. We've been laying out the question, Beth, has been what would audio from his final conversations shed light on in terms of what might have led to his death by suicide and whether something could have been done to prevent it. I'm going to acknowledge we are focused on Hernandez here. There is a broader context in which there are survivors of somebody who he murdered, that he was accused of two other murders that he was acquitted for. But I want to be thoughtful and respectful of the full range of people who might be listening to this conversation. Our focus is there and in those days before. And the last piece has to do with an issue that you raise is the pain Hernandez might have experienced by being outed in the days before his death. Talk about that.
So on WEEI, very shortly before his death, they were some of the personalities on the radio were joking and making fun of him potentially being gay. Now, we do know from some of our reporting from the Globe that he did have relationships with at least a couple of men. And so, and his fiance kind of knew that maybe there were going to be allegations that there had been men in his life because the lawyers had alerted her to that.
As part of a trial?
Exactly. But what we don't know is if Aaron either heard that on the radio or if people in prison had heard it and told him and if that bothered him. His mother, who we were in touch with, Andrew from the Globe was in touch with, she wonders if this was something, but we just can't know.
So it's a question, but there's nothing necessarily in the calls of those final days that answers one way or another definitively whether that was a piece of what was on his
mind. It does not come up in the calls.
All right. So, Todd, given how complex all of this is, how did you think about framing this story and what these tapes told you in the end?
Well, like a lot of suicides, it's very frustrating in that we don't have answers. We're left with a lot of questions. But this gives us a chance to focus on some bigger issues like concussions and CTE and the research being done to try to figure out this disease and figure out if there's some way to identify it and people who are still alive and prevent it in the future. It gives us a chance to talk about illegal drug use in the prisons and how prisoners are treated. And I think that's what's important, being able to use this awful tragedy to try to focus and shed light on some bigger issues.
And Beth, does this feel now like the end of the road, or do you think there's more of this story to tell?
Well, as you might imagine, Todd might have another appeal or two out for the Department of Correction.
For additional information.
And to hear both sides of the conversation to see if that sheds additional light, as well as perhaps some additional phone calls.
And it did answer any questions for you, Beth?
It was really good to hear those, just to find us to answer that question, you know, did he suddenly change? Did he reveal something different on the phone calls than we'd heard before? And he really didn't.
No. All right, Beth Healy, Todd Wallach, our investigative reporters here at WBUR. Thanks both for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.